The Judiciary Committee will come to order. It is 3:30 on the afternoon of May the 8th, 2007. We have a quorum to conduct business. Senator McGuire is here, Senator Terrio, Senator Wilikowski, and myself, Senator French. We are here today to hear two bills, HB 121, dealing with workers' comp records, and HB 175, dealing with the exercise of eminent domain and access to recreational waterways. And first up is HB 121. I see the prime sponsor here, Representative Wilson. Thank you for being here, Representative Wilson. Please come forward with your staff if you'd like. Put yourself on the record, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony. Let me just say, to set the stage, the reason you're here is because I asked you to be here. So thank you very much for being here. The bill was in the Finance Committee. I plucked it out of there. I know that probably wasn't your first choice, and so I know you're kind of here under duress.
Oh.
I appreciate that. But the bill did affect a court case, and so that's why I asked to have it here. And so I know it's not your first choice, but thank you for being a good sport, and please proceed.
I'm Representative Peggy Wilson from District 2. And House Bill 121 is an act that releases information in individual workers' compensation records. And it started out as a bill to protect personal information from falling into wrong hands. And there was a lawsuit that did happen, and a company that kind of is known as an ambulance chasing company, you might say, tried to get lots of different information from workers' comp, and when they refused that, they went ahead and sued and won. And the reason they won is because the judge said that it was the wording was ambiguous, and so my bill was to make sure that wording was no longer ambiguous. And there are some changes to the bill, and I will turn it over to my capable staff, Cliff Stone.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Cliff Stone, for the record, staff to Representative Wilson. As Representative Wilson indicated, this refers to this legislation was introduced to clarify any ambiguity in existing state statute. As originally introduced in 2005, Senate Bill 169, which Senator Terrio should be very familiar with, prohibited the Division of Workers' Compensation from assembling or providing information relating to an individual records outside the scope of the Workers' Compensation Act. That bill eventually got quite a few other items attached to it. It even with those 30 pages of narrative, that bill passed out 19 to 0 in the Senate, 39 to zip in the House. But we come back here today before you with the stripped down version, a two-page bill, if you will, that just clarifies that this information is to be kept private and out of the hands of those commercial operators that would take that information and divulge it to parties unknown. We just simply don't know, myself and the department, do not know when they get a request where that information is going to wind up. In a court case, Lasanke Kubler versus Lasanke et al.
Just for the record, yes. It's O'Brien, Bond, Cohen, Kubler.
Yes.
I see Mr. Lasanke shaking his head, so I don't know if he wants to be on both sides of that lawsuit.
Okay. And I was just, for brevity, I was going right to the chase, but it was O'Brien, Bond, Cohen, and Kubler versus Lasanke et al. The Alaska Superior Court found the above statute reference to be ambiguous. Further, the court found that the state did not submit any solid legislative intent or history on the matter. That is what Representative Wilson is attempting to do with HB 121, is to provide in clear, no uncertain terms, this information, names, addresses, phone numbers, email addresses, and social security numbers are not to be distributed to anybody off the street who asks for them. It also has a opt-in provision. If an employee feels like they want their information to be given out to anybody. They can sign an agreement with the Department of Labor to allow that to happen. And that, I believe, is in Section 2 of the bill. Let's see. Yes, Mr. Chairman, Section 2.
Senator McGuire.
So on that point, then, the argument that an employee who may want their information given is refuted, because you're giving an opportunity, if that individual so chooses, to make that known.
Through the chair, Senator McGuire.
It's an honor when you say
That is correct.
Okay.
And while we're here, let's just make sure that we're all on the same page, and that is that we have in front of us CS for House Bill number 121, Labor and Commerce Amended, /echo.alpha, yeah. E.A, is the working document that everybody should have. And I don't know that we have to adopt that, but if we do, I'd entertain a motion just to keep the record clear. No, it's before us.
Right.
It hasn't changed from anything. Thank you, Senator Terry. Question, Senator Terry?
Yes, the language is different than 169. The language that was being added in 169 last year, which passed overwhelmingly in the two bodies, said, and the employee's name, address, social security number, and telephone number would be withheld. Now it's been changed so the person's name is out there, so social security number is not, their electronic mailing address is not, and telephone number is not. Why have you allowed the person's name and regular mailing address?
You want to come in?
Through the chair, Senator Terrio, that was an amendment that passed on the floor of the House, and I was against it, but I got up.
What was the argument?
That they thought the person that... It didn't make sense to me, so I don't know if it makes sense to anybody else either. Part of it was because they thought attorneys needed to have access to the name and addresses. However, I did do some checking, and any attorney has that right anyway. You know, if there's a lawsuit or anything like that, the attorney automatically has that right to do that.
But
to get that information.
Aren't they after... There's no lawsuit yet. They just want the information because a claim has been made. They want to know, find out where the potential lawsuits are.
That's right.
And I'm just not sure. Is there a legal duty to provide that?
Maybe I can jump. Did you get a copy of this before the hearing?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's in my packet or not.
But let me take a look and see. It's the lawsuit referred to by Mr. Stone just a few minutes ago. And let me just take about 3 minutes, if I could, and run through the content of this decision so we sort of understand what the debate's all about. The lawsuit was brought by a law firm that wanted information from the state of Alaska Department of Labor about workers' compensation claims. They filed a request for information. Some of the requests were complied with, some were denied. When the denial happened, the law firm filed a lawsuit against Mr. Lasanki and the rest of the other folks who had domain over the records. And on page 5 of the decision, the judge reviews the public records doctrine, and I think it's an important thing to have in front of us when we think about this bill. And about towards the bottom of the page, the court is quoting from the public records statutes and says, unless specifically provided otherwise, the public records of all public agencies are open to inspection by the public under reasonable rules during regular office hours. The decision goes on to point out that the Supreme Court has noted there is a strong public interest in disclosure of the affairs of government. On the next page, on page 6, the judge wrote that courts have characterized the right of citizen access to public rights as a fundamental right. Now, there are exceptions, of course. The exceptions are listed a little bit down the page. It says every person has a right to inspect a public record in the state, including public records, blah, 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 except records required to be kept confidential by a federal law or regulation or by state law. And the court goes on to point out that to further the legislative policy of broad public access, courts narrowly construe any exceptions. And the judge goes on to point out that the common law on public inspection of government records as developed in other jurisdictions and acknowledged in Alaska, provides that an inspection should be denied when there is a demonstrable need for confidentiality and when that need outweighs the public interest in disclosure. So that's kind of the landscape of the debate. Does confidentiality trump disclosure or vice versa? A couple pages down the decision, the court quotes from the law that we passed in 2005. The law that we passed in 2005 was the result of a fairly lengthy special session. It's hard to remember that one since we spent so much time last year, but before last year there was 2005. And the bill we passed said the division may not assemble or provide information respecting individual records for commercial purposes that are outside the scope of the chapter. So the big question of the lawsuit was, is this disclosure for commercial purposes? And if so, it's prohibited. If not, they're allowed. The judge on page 11 says the court finds the statute ambiguous in several ways. Nearly anything today can be characterized as a, quote, commercial purpose, including government itself sometimes. There has been much discussion in a variety of forums through the years on whether the practice of law is a profession or a commercial venture. The bottom of the page, page 11, the judge points out the transmittal letter from the governor on the bill included the stated purpose of the legislation is to, quote, enhance the efficiency of the current system by expanding worker access to legal counsel. And then on the next page, there's quite a bit of testimony from Mr. Lasanke before one of the committees in which he said we want to be able to give information to people that need it so they can get good health care, so they can get paid for providing that health care, so that an insurance company or an employer or an employee can get information they need to settle, to resolve, or if necessary, have a hearing on a disputed claim. We're trying to restrict the scope of information that we give out for purely commercial purposes. And the last thing the judge says is that the court has to recognize that providing those injured on the job with accurate information about their legal rights is an important public interest recognized by the legislature. It is also clear that attorneys are more willing to represent persons in workers' compensation cases if there are related more profitable tort claims that can be pursued for the client. Clearly, other legal remedies may help workers settle or resolve workers' compensation claims as the director wanted. And so the judge found that because the legislation is aimed at protecting workers injured on the job, and O'Brien's, the law firm's, efforts to give workers information about their possible legal rights accomplishes that aim, the records had to be divulged. And that's what brought Representative Wilson and Mr. Stone to our committee. So I think that's the landscape of the debate. And Senator Wilkowski's response.
Well, I'll just, I guess, make kind of an observation. Court cases, the information is public. And I don't know that there's a tremendous difference between someone going and filing a court case and someone going and filing a workers' compensation case. So I kind of see the rationale there. I certainly can understand someone's desire for privacy, but I guess once you've gone ahead and filed a workers' comp case, you, to some extent, have given that up.
Questions, comments, responses? Anything else from the bill's sponsors?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the reason, because of what the judge said, that it says a statute is to be interpreted according to its plain meaning, and if it is ambiguous, the court is to look at the intent of the legislature. So we wanted to make it clear that the intent of the legislature is not to have private information given out to just anybody that wants it. And so I would like to read a letter from one of my constituents. It says, my husband Gene and I both had minor injuries while we were working at Trident Seafoods Corporation Shore Plant in Sandpoint, Alaska. We each received unwelcome solicitations from some lawyers back east asking if we were injured on a floating processing vessel. I do not want my personal information to be made available to the public and wondered how these lawyers got my name in the first place. I do not believe it is appropriate for the state of Alaska to release this information without my consent. To be blunt, the fact that I have suffered an injury in the workplace and filed a claim under workers' comp should not entitle the public to my home address and any other personal information. I certainly do not want some ambulance-chasing lawyer soliciting me because of my claim. If I had wanted to hire a lawyer to represent me, there are plenty of local attorneys available. They advertise in Alaska Airlines magazine and every fishing magazine published. And so they were very upset about this. And so that's where I'm coming from in this letter, or in this bill.
Well, I'm wondering if the making sure that people know of their legal rights isn't covered by Section 2, where, you know, the employee, if they want to get solicitations, can release that information. But those that don't and want to be very protective of their personal information, the default would be that they would get the protection. Anybody then that, and maybe Mr. Lisinski can tell us how the system works, with regard to the employee that wants to sign a release so that they get the solicitations, at what point in the process would that be available to them? So,
through the chair, Senator Terrio, I believe it's early on in the process. Once you file a workers' compensation claim, the division then gives you a packet of information, and in that packet is, it kind of directs your attention to the fact that if you're not completely satisfied, or you want to hire an attorney outside of this area, then you're permitted to do so. Where the opt-in or opt-out clause would come in, I'm not sure, but I would assume it'd be early on in the process, and perhaps Mr. Lisinski can answer that specific question.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to answer the question, because it's one thing to say you have the right to hire an attorney, but is it made clear, would you like to sign this paper so attorneys will contact you? Is a different issue.
Yeah.
Through the chair, Senator Terrio, I understand.
Any further questions or comments before we bring Mr. Lisinski up?
Mr. Chairman, I wanted to follow up on something you said about Senate Bill 130 was the bill that you had before you in a special session. It was an omnibus workers' comp bill, the first one that had come before the legislature in quite a number of years for a rewrite of the workers' compensation laws, specifically added in section, I believe it was section 39 of that bill, it says release of information. It read as follows: the division may not assemble or provide information respecting individuals or information respecting individuals' records for commercial purposes that are outside the scope of this chapter. And so when the Division of Workers' Comp refused to give that information, and thus they were sued, to make a long story short. So that's why we're back here today, to try and clarify this is the legislative intent. We do not want the release of that information. And as Representative Wilson said, on the floor it was amended, barely passed, to say, okay, we could allow the names and addresses, not they didn't want the Social Security numbers released, et cetera, but felt like the names and addresses could be released. But Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I submit to you, why even have a bill then if we're still going to release the names and addresses of individuals? The sponsor feels that this bill is here to protect the privacy rights of those individuals. And again, if they want to opt in and release that information, they can do so.
And I agree, that's sort of the debate, you know, and you've set the debate very well. Of course, we also know that these are government documents that are public records, and you know, the issue is that commercial purposes, and was one of the purposes of the bill to help workers get compensation for their injuries. So I think Senator McGuire was first, actually, and then Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, so I think everybody has said it well. There's a balance that you're trying to achieve. I would submit to you today that this bill does not do what you want it to do. So this right now, as amended, is a bad bill. And that's just from a purely objective point of view. The goal that you're seeking to achieve is not accomplished by this bill. So I think we need to decide as a committee whether the goal they're trying to achieve is achievable or worth achieving, and if so, in what form. And I would just submit, perhaps Mr. Lisinski could help, the way that I see it is Senator French is right. I mean, workers should have the right to have access to information about how to recover damages and so forth and medical treatment for their injuries. So that's important. But secondly, I don't believe that the government has an obligation to weigh people's privacy interests less for somebody else's desire to earn a living. I don't think that's right. So the way I would look at it would be that we ought to clean the bill up to say that for the workers, that workers have some kind of an impartial method of making a decision. That's first of all. You don't want it to be that you're leaning on them to sign a document, that they don't realize they're giving up rights or something like this. But there ought to be a point in time that's very understandable where they can either opt in or opt out. And when they make that decision about whether they want their name public or not, it should be everything. It shouldn't be part of it. It should be everything, because it's their private information. And I see no other way around it, because it's the person's information and it's their right, if they would like, to have the ability for that to be released and potentially to go into litigation that we're talking about. It should not be the law firm's right. I don't think the law firm has a right at all. I don't think commercial rights supersede privacy rights of individual health information. I don't think that's right.
And I think I partially agree with you and partially disagree. Private health information, absolutely. Name and address, there's no health information in a name and an address. It's simply a name and an address.
And just
let me complete the thought. Most people don't know their rights. Most people, if confronted with a injury, will take less for their injury than what they might get with some help. And that's, to me, a unfair advantage or unfair disadvantage.
So on the first point, I agree with you to a degree, but not in this context. Everybody understands that a name and an address in this context means, by definition, you're an injured worker. By definition. So it's not that you're just taking some name or some address out of any system. You're taking it out of injured workers in workers' compensation. So it is a medical issue. By definition, you have been injured, and that's why your name is in the system. So that's why I disagree on the first point. But on the second one, I agree with you. And I do believe that there's a fine line here between what rights people know they're giving up or what decisions they're making. And that's why I think that should be the focal point of the bill. At what point is that worker, is it in a neutral setting where they're not unduly influenced, and are they getting the kind of information they need to make the decision about whether they want their private information to be available or not?
And I guess, and just Senator Wilkowski is dying to jump in, but oh. We're having a great debate. And I guess the question is whether a letter from a lawyer is so invasive, a letter that you can easily put in the trash can. I get lots of junk mail, and I'm sure you do too. Whether that's so invasive as to be an exception to the broad public policy of government records being open for inspection, because you're closing that off if you operate too heavy-handedly. Senator Wilkowski.
No, this is a very interesting debate. I think it's I can see all different sides of it. But I think that the analysis shouldn't be, well, we can't make this public because they're going to get letters from certain people or phone calls from certain people. I think the analysis is, should this be a public record or not? And I think there's a lot of reasons that it should be. When people get injured and they file a court case, those are public records. When you own property, that's a public record. When you file for a property tax exemption, that's a public record. Longevity bonus, that's a public record. The public has access to all those things, and there are a lot of good reasons that we do that. Open and transparent government. I think one of the reasons to make this information public, at least the name and the address, is so that the public, if someone, I mean, you hear all these horror stories, or occasional horror stories about the injured worker who claimed that he was totally disabled and was out working at other jobs. And so if the public had some means, I guess the public should have some way of identifying those people. You're going before a public tribunal. You have hearings that are being publicly held. I think there's a lot of reasons why some of the information should be public. Social security numbers, I don't, obviously shouldn't be public. Health records obviously shouldn't be public. But names and addresses, in my book, I think the balance tips in the favor of making it public.
And let me just help the world out by saying this. I asked for this bill to come to me. It came to me. I had to promise in blood that it would not stay in this committee. And from my own personal view, the bill is in pretty fair shape. It's a fair balance. I know it doesn't comport with the desires of the sponsor, but I don't know that there's any will to change the bill as it sits here. So
where does it go next?
It goes to Finance Committee, and it's my belief, to be frank, that there's going to be a pretty strong effort to change it there, and you may win there. I don't know, but in any event, I think that's the future of the bill, and so I, with the forbearance of the sponsor, I would solicit a motion on the bill unless there's further committee discussion.
Well, I guess I just want to ask. I see the desire of the chairman, and I respect that. I guess I just asked Representative Wilson, are you comfortable with that?
Well, I do want to make a comment. You know, we're living in a different time now than we even did 10 years ago. And we have changed other statutes in this state to protect people's privacy. And it used to be anybody could get on and find out who applied for a permanent fund dividend. That they can't do that anymore. And so, you know, we're, because of what else is going on in the world and identity theft and things like that, we are slowly ratcheting it down, because not only is that information available to other attorneys, but to anybody.
Yeah.
You know, to anybody. And so, you need to realize that it might not just be somebody that wants to make some money on, but it might be somebody that, if they have somebody's name and address, they could do something else, and it's identity theft. So I think that's where we have to be. We're protecting the public, and we do it with the permanent fund dividend, and the only thing they have is their name and address. We don't even do it there. So, I think we need to realize that we're in a different world than we were. So, you know, if you want to move the bill out, I won't stop you, that's for sure.
Senator Terrio, and then Senator McGuire.
Could we have the department just at least answer some of the questions that were raised?
Sure, I don't
want
to question anything. I just don't want to stand in the way of the bill. But if you'd like Mr. Lysanky to come forward, please.
For the record, my name is Paul F. Lysanky. I'm the Director of the Division of Workers' Compensation within the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
Good afternoon, Mr. Lysanky.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just, I'd just like to offer 2 points of clarification in the discourse that you've had before you, and then I'd be glad to try and answer any questions that the members have. One point of clarification is that the information that the stream begins with our division as a report of an injury or illness, and we strongly encourage people who have had anything happen to them on the workplace to file rather than not file. So the information stream begins not when someone has actually formulated the desire to make some type of a claim for a benefit. I mean, it starts with someone who has had an incident on the work, at work. And some of them are quite mundane and never amount to anything in the way of, you know, no medical treatment, no time loss, no anything. But you know, with everything from flesh-eating bacteria to who knows what, I mean, if you cut your finger at work, it's probably not a bad idea to report it, even if you're not intending to do anything except slap a Band-Aid on it. The other thing I'd like to point out is that while most of the discussion has talked about, obviously, the lawsuit was focused around some requests for information by a law firm that wanted to file some maritime claims. In the time that I've been at the division, which is a little over 3 years, we have never gotten a request from law firms that wanted to represent people in Alaska workers' compensation on Alaska workers' compensation matter consistent with the chapter, which is something that we would have given out anyway. This was an arguably related lawsuit that would have come from the same work incident if it occurred under certain circumstances and met requirements that would defeat the Alaska statute's exclusive liability provisions. And Senator Wilkowski is well aware from his experience in workers' compensation that that's I would characterize as a bit of a gray area. I don't know what his characterization would be, but you know, by and large, there are not lawsuits with every workers' compensation claim. By and large, there are. It's designed not to have a lawsuit with the claim. But there are gray areas where you can get into arguments about whether someone has a right in addition to the workers' compensation benefits claim. With that, I will yield the floor and give you back your committee meeting. And I'm sorry if I rolled on, but I just wanted to put those 2 points on the record.
That was useful information, Mr. Lisanki. Thank you. Senator Terrio.
So what point in your process would this Section 2 kick in, where the employee has the right to, you know, sign a release and, you know, get solicitations?
Through the chair, Senator Terrio, I don't know. It would, as the sponsor said, it would have to be pretty early on. I don't know if we would have enough room to include it in, say, with the original injury report, which is, as I said, the starting point, or whether we would have to design a standalone form, which most likely would be communicated back to someone who had filed an injury report.
Okay, and under the current wording of this bill, where the employee's name and address, mailing address, is available, why would they want to take the extra step to say that, well, now you can have my Social Security number?
Through the chair, Senator Terrio, I can't imagine that anybody would be interested in giving out their Social Security number to anybody. And it may just be that through the amendment process, you know, there's a provision that's no longer necessary. I will say parenthetically that although there is nothing in the statute that addresses Social Security numbers, we in the division do not routinely mention them or print them in our written decisions and things like that. So we're not trying to inflict unnecessary injuries on people, but we do have them on the vast majority of our forms.
Senator Wilikowski and then Senator McGuire.
Thank you. How many requests would you say you get in a year for information about employees?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I do not have a firm number, sir, but I have attempted to talk to the people down in Juneau that handle these requests, and the times that I've asked them as kind of an informal sampling, we've had someplace between 8 and 12 requests a day. Obviously, much different than the request for that lawsuit. The more typical request, and this is something I'm sure you've run into before, the more typical request is from a service asking us to report whether or not Mr. John Doe has reported any workers' compensation injuries in the last 7 years.
And by Mr. They don't say John Doe. They'd put a name on there. And
oh, yes.
Check. Hollis,
yes, sir,
for insurance.
Mr. Chairman, a specific name, right. Oftentimes a handful of names, and then they want us to go through our records and report back to them if someone has ever filed an injury report during that period.
Follow-up?
Yeah, and how many of those, out of the 8 to 12 that you get, how many of those are from those companies trying to get information?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, based, again, on my rough sample, I would say about 50%. I mean, 4 or 5 a day, probably.
And if I could, Mr. Chair, what do you give out currently the Social Security number, email address, and telephone numbers?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, if someone asks us for a hard copy of information and it's on, and that document has that information on it, yes, sir, we would give it out.
Mm. Senator McGuire.
Yeah, so this is a really interesting debate because when we started the debate, we were centering around the idea, or at least this was a penumbra, that perhaps there were these, you know, there was a desire to prevent litigation. And what we've just heard from Paul is that, in fact, he's never received a request from a law firm asking for information about injured workers relating to injured worker lawsuits. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's my testimony.
Okay, so that's an interesting fact. Second of all, I've just thought of two other things that I think the committee should think about that you deal with when you have an injury. My concern now has shifted to insurance companies and to other employers. It started in a different place, and it just shifted. So now what I'm thinking is that the names and addresses are being potentially asked for by insurance companies who might, for example, want to document whether you have a pre-existing injury in an effort to deny you medical treatment, or perhaps to assess how large your premium will be for your policy. Or perhaps it is another fishing company, not to cast aspersions on fishing companies, but any company, that might want to see whether you're the type of person that files a workers' comp claim, because they might believe there's a type of person out there that does that. So I just kind of want to ask you guys, have you thought of those things? Because that's where my mind just went.
Senator Willa
Cowan. I have. I mean, that's why this is such a kind of an interesting bill. I mean, it cuts in a lot of different directions, and that's why I think, personally, you really need to put all those aside and just focus in on, is this a public record that should be public or not? Because there are a lot of different, you know, you could say the same thing about property tax records, for instance, or longevity bonus records or senior records. There's probably a lot of devious things that people can do with those, with that information. I'm not sure that's the right focus, because there are bad things that can happen on both sides.
With all due respect, though, I think health records, in my mind, rise up above property records. I mean, you're talking about somebody's health. And that's the consistent argument I've made with DNA and all those things, is that it's the health, it's your health.
But what we've heard here, just to step in before we get to Senator Dario, is it could be everything from a finger cut to a missing limb. And so I think, you know, the name and the address in front of you, you say to yourself, well, this person either has a finger cut or a missing limb, and there's no way to find out based on the name and the address, unless that person decides to tell you later. Senator Terry.
But I think with regard to the reference to, well, is it the same for longevity bonus records? Well, what are you going to find out from that, whether the person is an elderly person? Well, you can tell that by looking at them. Or if they're filling out a job application, you know, well, I guess you can't ask for age. But if this is going to be something where I, as an employer, get the list, and everybody that turns in an application, I'm going to say, okay, have they made claims, you know, against the seafood, if a past seafood processor? And if so, they're not going to make the first cut,
yeah,
you know, for me. And so I'm just wondering if that potential danger outweighs the fact that, well, will the person, if they are injured, know how to get adequate legal advice? Because that's the thing on the other side. And the individual employee seems like they can control whether they want to go through the yellow pages or whatever and look for an attorney. But they can't necessarily control whether there's a bad actor out there who they just put in a job application that's going to screen them out because they have the audacity to exercise their rights in it with a previous employer.
Mm-hmm. Can we take a brief at ease?
Sure.
Let's go back on the record. Any more committee discussion or debate?
You ready for a motion, Mr. Chair?
Seeing none, yes, a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we move CS for House Bill number 121, LNC, as amended, version E, period A, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the bill is moved from committee. Short recess while we do the paperwork. Thank you for being here. on the record. Next up is CS for House Bill 175. We have the prime sponsor in the back of the room, Representative Johnson. Representative Johnson, welcome to the committee. It's very nice
to see what we can do with his
bill. I just don't know. You weren't here for much of last year, Senator McGuire, when Representative Johnson sat before this committee on this topic, and I just don't know if we have time to torture him through nine committee hearings like we did last year.
That's right. This was when Grayson was born.
He did such great work last year in front of this committee, patiently and calmly working his way through this bill, that I welcome you back warmly. It's very nice to see you. Representative, please put yourself on the record and present your bill to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Craig Johnson, District 28 Representative, and it sounded to me like it was almost a motion to move the bill. So, thank you. I appreciate you hearing this today. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think three of the four of you were on Judiciary last year and heard eminent domain bill that was a direct response to a rather egregious case in Connecticut where some homes were taken basically to increase the tax rolls of a city. At the direction of my boss at the time, then Representative McGuire, we started looking at it and started, one of the most egregious parts of it was that we were actually taking someone's home. Out of the 75 homes, some people lived there all their lives. And started looking at it and decided, well, this couldn't happen in Alaska, and we determined that, yes, it actually could. And that was the genesis of the bill that started last year that I think has become model legislation for real estate communities. A lot of states are using that as model legislation. In addition to that, we protected a person's primary residence from being confiscated, for lack of a better term, through eminent domain within a radius of 250 feet, and that's roughly 2.5-3 acres. This bill basically doesn't change anything in that legislation, but it extends that same privilege of 250 feet to someone's permanent recreational structure. In testimony last year, we heard a lot of people saying that, well, we're building our second home, it's going to be a retirement home, and then we're going to sell this one and move there. And so what this bill does is basically extends that same privilege to the individual who has a recreational structure within 250 feet. It doesn't change any of the eminent domain laws. It doesn't, it still allows for the legitimate use of eminent domains, which would be roads, hospitals, schools, public buildings, gas pipelines, whatever needs to be done for the legitimate undertaking of the government. It is a firm belief of mine that the greatest use of property is to be in a private person's hands. So this prohibits the taking of a recreational property for a recreational purpose. On the floor, this bill was amended, which also gave the Department of Fish and Game, I think it's the Department of Fish and Game, the maker of that amendment is here today, but it basically allows them to inventory streams and see if there are properties which could be purchased to inventory that so that we can continue to guarantee some access. Previous administrations have not, when land was transferred, did not guarantee access to Alaskans. This allows the department to go in and do inventories of that, make an offer. It is not intrusive. If they say no, they don't want to sell, they're taken off the list. There is no use of eminent domain to take those properties. It's just a way to guarantee continued access to fishing streams in Alaska. And with that, I think a lot of you are familiar with it, and that's the basis of the bill, so I'd be happy to entertain any questions. Or
sure, let me just open by saying that I think that really this bill is sort of nicely balanced at the front and the back end. Mm-hmm. It does two things, but it does them, I think, in a nice complementary way. And so I just want to commend you on being willing to put both provisions into one bill. Questions for the sponsor? Questions or comments? Do we need discussion? Senator Terrio.
So I'm sorry, we're just adding or recreational structure so that it's not your main place of dwelling, or you're just expanding it?
Through the chair, Senator Terrio, that is correct. And there is a provision in there. There were some concerns about someone maybe having a tent and just moving it around on a 100-acre lot. It has to be a permanent structure, but it is a recreational facility, a hunting cabin, fishing cabin, cabin on a lake. And you have to have clear title. There's it's not a lease or anything like that. So we're just adding recreational property.
with the 250-foot sort of caveat, I guess, if you will. You don't get unlimited protection against your cabin if it's on 10 acres and the recreational facility. I mean, should some misguided local governmental agency decide to plunk a recreational facility down, you know, on someone's 10-acre plot, it's at least got to be 250 feet away from the cabin. That's what you're extending. That's the extent of the protection you're extending.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. And that translates into about 3 acres. I mean, if you take the radius of a circle, it's not exact. We don't sell land in circles. So that's roughly 250 feet, which is roughly 3 acres, which gives people privacy, that's gives nice. Them enough room to sure. still have their waterfront and to maintain their privacy and still maintain the ambiance of a recreational facility, yet still allowing in those cases where there are overriding public needs to be able to do that. So that is correct.
And again, this wouldn't stop the gas pipeline one iota.
Mr. Chairman, no, it wouldn't. And we have been very careful to protect both in this bill and the previous bill those legitimate uses of eminent domain, because there are times when maybe there's a stubborn landowner standing in the way of a road or a pipeline or electrical utility. And we don't want to do anything to take away the legitimate use of eminent domain, but we want to narrow it down. And once again, it goes back to that core policy or belief that I have, that the greatest use of land is in a private person's hands.
Other questions or comments? Was well put, Senator Terrio.
Well, there's Section 4, so I don't know if you want Representative Guerra to speak to this or not, but on line 21, the list must include at least 2 and not more than 5 meander miles along a fishing waterway. I guess I'm not, I need a little more explanation on this section.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, I would invite Representative Guerra up to speak to his amendment, which, by the way, I do support and was happy to have that on the floor. So this is something I do stand firmly behind.
Representative Guerra, welcome to the Judiciary Committee. Put yourself on the record and explain to us what a meander mile is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Guerra, District 23. For starters, meander mile is defined. It's a linear distance of land along a fishing stream. The goal was this. We don't want the state to go out and inventory every single piece of private property around the state. And we know they won't be able to buy it. We don't want it. We know that on Montana Creek, for example, a big trout fishing stream north of Anchorage, there's somewhat over a mile of private land that's going to impede public access one of these days. The Anchor River over 3 miles down on the Kenai Peninsula. Salcha River somewhere over 3 miles of private land. And nobody's even saying we want all of that. We want the Department of Fish and Game and DNR to go see how much public access we might lose in the most important access spots. We don't want them to put together a list of 50 miles worth of stuff that they'll never buy, so we cap it at 5 miles for the list. We don't want them to ignore the bill and not do anything, so we say the minimum should be about 2 miles. It seems like, you know, if we could ever get up to 2 or 3 miles worth of land back that's important public access, that would be great.
Senator Terrio, follow up.
I guess, I'm sorry, I've known that you've been working on this for a while, but I've never had an opportunity to really understand what you're proposing. So, say the Salcha River, a lot of recreational cabins in my district, so I know of that one in particular. So this language says, is or may in the future be impeded by private land ownership, the access to the waterway. I don't know if right now that people feel like access to the Salcha River is getting close to being cut off, may in the future. Wouldn't that sweep in all of these rivers?
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Terrio, that's precisely the reason that we've capped it at 5 miles. We're going to give the Department of Fish and Game and DNR the ability to say what are the most important places where it's most likely we're going to lose public access. Today, on all of those rivers that I mentioned, public access is pretty good. People aren't throwing you off their property. The lands haven't been developed. On Montana Creek and the Anchor River, I think those are Siri lands. They haven't been developed very much at all. The point is to do what they failed to do in the lower 48, which is try and buy the easements now while the land's undeveloped instead of waiting for it to be developed, waiting for the conflicts, and finding out it's too expensive to ever buy back. So it's to sort of say, look, take a look at river corridors that are important. If you believe that there's really going to be development in these areas, the state should think about buying some easement rights if the landowners want to sell. and if they don't want to sell, then go look somewhere else.
So just to follow up, the next sentence, that list must include at least two, not more than five meander miles. So if you identify a river that's getting close to having problems, you should propose property or easements to buy of at least that length.
Through the chair, Senator Terrio, not on that river. The 2 or 5 miles don't have to be on one river. They could be, it might be that there's 100 yards that you really need on the Salcha. It might be there's 800 yards you really need on Montana Creek. You want it to total somewhere at least around 2 miles, and we know that there's at least 2 miles. You know, all of Gibraltar Creek off of Lake Iliamna is barred to public access. You know, there are dozens of miles of important fishing streams that are closed or nearly closed to public access right now.
Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. Yeah, I really haven't heard a whole lot about this bill. But
right. But, every day.
Just
as you make the road.
Just is this a problem in the lower 48, I guess, number one? And I guess I think you partially answered it. You're not talking about buying like miles of stream, one particular stream. You're talking about maybe buying like 100 yards here so that the public has an easement or an access through. Is that what you're talking about? Is that what this is intended to do?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, it would depend on the stream and the importance of it. You know, if I had my druthers, but I'm not the commissioner of Fish and Game or Natural Resources, I would take a real important stream like Montana Creek and try and buy an access corridor for the roughly 2 miles or so that the public uses every day now, but won't be able to use 20 years from now if we can't get the public access. But, you know, on some streams where, you know, maybe the water is so deep that you just need an access point to the river, but you're not going to wade along the river anyway, you wouldn't want all that much of that river anyway. In the lower 48, it has been a problem. Ruby River, a number of the rivers around Wyoming and Montana, you hear the stories, and there are the stories, and they're true. I mean, they've given away public access to ranchers, and what you have to do to fish a stream there is you have to go to the rancher, you have to pay some huge amount of money, and you get to fish the river for the day. You know, where I grew up in New York, there's a great brown trout stream. You have to rent time on the stream. You know, in the lower 48, in huge places, huge amounts of areas, people have lost public access to their best rivers, and you actually have to have a lot of money to fish places where here we don't have that problem.
Senator McGuire?
Yeah. So, Representative Gehr, we've talked about this bill before. I support your part of it. I think it's, and it is a healthy balance, as the chair said, between, on the one hand, enforcing private property rights where people recreate with their families, and on the other hand, making sure that the way I see it is families that may not have the means, may not have the ability to afford a recreational cabin or so forth, that they have the same ability to enjoy Alaska the way that others do. And so it's really personal to me now that I have my son, because I think looking out into the future, my life will be very different than the one that I grew up in, where my father flew and we could go all around and see different things. That probably won't be my life. So I look around and say, well, where will I go with Grayson, and what will the opportunities be for him? And to me, this is a very forward-looking way to think about it, that before the problems come that we have seen in other places, that you take the time and sort of think about how the public gets to enjoy the really wonderful opportunities that there are in our state. So I think it's great.
You want to respond to that?
She's hired.
Happy talk. I do have one question, and I'm just...
Oh, Mr. God, Johnson. He's got a chart out.
Mr. Johnson may remember that. Representative Johnson, may remember that I did this sometime to him last year, so it's not imperative for me to do it to Representative Garup. I just need to understand how this works. And this is a diagram of a river and my cabin that I finally afford, and I get to buy a cabin. It's got riverfront property, and I think that's wonderful. And now the commissioner is giving someone access to the river alongside my property. They bought a little, you know, 10-foot strip from maybe my property or from my neighbors. But in any event, I've got the public now tromping down the river. My question is what happens when they get to the river? Can they walk along my property line? Do they have to be in the water when they walk by, or do they launch a boat? And what are my rights with respect to that riverfront stretch under your bill?
Mr. Chair, right now, under state law, everybody has public access up to the high water mark. So even if there is no easement along your land, people can walk in the water if it's not too deep, and that's the problem, right? There are a lot of rivers where you're not going to walk.
The Kenai River, you can hardly, well, some places you can, some places
you can't. In the current.
Right, and those are precisely the places where you need public access. So, and frankly, on most rivers, the state has retained public access along its rivers. When the state gives away land, the state retains public access to and along rivers. But a lot of Alaska lands were given away through the ANILCA process and then prior to when we had that statute. So there are many lands where right now on that cabin, the stream bank area is private. If that was an important area for public access, the Department of Fish and Game might come to you and say, Senator French, can we buy a 20-foot strip so that people can access along the river? You might say yes. You might say no.
There's nothing in your bill that makes me say yes.
Nothing makes you say yes.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Senator Terry.
But the mean high water means where the water was at one time, maybe in the spring breakup. They don't have to walk in the water. It's between the water and where the water is on a normal course, you know, of fluctuations. So they can walk along your riverbank and still be on state property.
Through the chair.
And just to be clear, that's the way law is right now.
Yeah, that's the law right now. Right. It's unclear. Of course, nobody really knows where mean high water is on most streams, but that's right. There are some places where you can walk along the edge of the bank because in the spring that is high water. You know, ideally you really want more than like a 3-foot section as you're walking along the river when you're fishing. And in truth, the state is not going to probably offer money to you for your piece of property next to your house because it's probably going to be too expensive. They're probably going to go to the places that are undeveloped, which is really what we want them to do. The undeveloped lands along those rivers that I mentioned because it's going to be cheaper. It's not going to cause land use conflicts. There's probably not going to be the money to buy the kind of land you were just talking about.
We do have one person from the public signed up to testify, and Ms. Blackwell is here.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add,
I beg your pardon, Representative.
Yes. And one of the things that I like about this, if they come to you, the department comes to you and says, do you want to sell your property, and you say no, you're off the list.
You're done.
So you're done. And unless you came back to them and said, maybe that offer 4 years ago I'd like to look at again, you probably wouldn't be contacted or bugged or anything. So it's one time, and that would be...
Am I speaking out of turn, Representative?
No, you're speaking on a former bill.
On a former bill. I apologize.
then I stand corrected. Then we should amend this. No. No.
Mr. Chair, what would happen is if you ask somebody, if Senator French, can we buy 100 yards along your piece of property? You say no, they're not going to bug you again, right? And they're probably going to take it off the list. Under an earlier version, we had something that said they had to take it off. We went through a bunch of machinations to get rid of the fiscal notes on this bill, and part of the original bill is gone now. The reality is they're not going to call you every day and say, change your mind? So.
Would a lawyer send me a letter?
Right, with your medical history included.
Only if your medical history works.
Okay, it is late in the afternoon. Maybe we should go to Ms. Blackwell. Blackwell, welcome to the committee. Please put yourself on the record. We'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Ruth Blackwell. I'm an associate broker with Powell Realty here in Juneau, and I'm here representing the Alaska Association of Realtors. And we just wanted to say that we were pleased that the bill passed last year, and we would like, we are in favor of the bill this year, and we would like you to just move it out of committee, and we'd be happy. And if you have any questions,
everybody asked that too.
If you have any
Senator
questions,
Terrio.
Which bill?
575.
Which is which part? The top part.
The top part. Yeah, we are neutral on the second part.
Thank you, Ms. Blackwell. Any other questions? No. More committee discussion. Ready for a motion, Senator Wilkowski?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that we move. House CS for House Bill Number 175, Judiciary as amended, version E, period A, out of committee, onto the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and fiscal note.
Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the bill's moved from committee. With that, we are adjourned.